feminism, political, economic, or social equality for women.
I don't think I'm less of a feminist when I wear a super short skirt.
I am a feminist.
I'm a feminist, although I do like to wear a lot of makeup.
And the misogyny that is in every culture is not a true part of the human condition.
It's important now to know things. You have to push your intelligence as far as it will go, but it's more important to understand things.
You should just be treated equally as a human.
What an idea.
Hi, welcome to another episode of F Word. We are here today to bring you a pretty serious show. So we're going to, this is a trigger warning. So we will be talking about violence and violence against women, violence of all types. So definitely, if you're not comfortable with this conversation, you're welcome to tune out. But yeah, so I guess today in studio, there's me, Emerald, and we also have
Eden
and Becca.
Yeah. So today is December 6th. And December 6th marks the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. So this day came about because of the École Polytechnique massacre that happened in Montreal in 1989. So this day is to honor the memory of the 14 young women killed in the Montreal massacre.
Yes, sorry. I'm just pulling up some info here. So it's also part of the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender Violence. So it's an annual international campaign designed to raise awareness and direct action towards ending gender-based violence. The campaign runs each year from November 25th, which is International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, to December 10th, International Human Rights Day. And again, it works to emphasize that violence against women is a human rights issue.
So on that note, we're just going to start off this show with a moment of silence to honor the memory of people who have lost their lives because of gender-based violence.
Thank you for sharing that moment of silence with us. So this morning there was a sunrise memorial at the Manitoba Ledge from 8 till 9 a.m. At the ledge there was a candle lighting where the members of the Mama Bear Patrol Clan actually lit the candles. So I think we'd like to transition into a bit of a discussion around the racialized and gender-based violence that occurs within the Canadian and Manitoba context.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to recognize that that racialized people do experience violence at a different rate than other people. Like, it is disproportionate.
Yeah, no, I definitely do agree. On Friday, actually, Leonard Monkman of Red Rising Media came and spoke with my class, our program specifically, discussing that, again, you attend events within Winnipeg and Manitoba context, and it's reiterated that we're on Treaty 1 land, but what does that mean? How do we go farther than just that acknowledgement? What does truth and reconciliation actually mean for Indigenous people, and how can we incorporate that into our lived experiences as Manitobans and Canadians?
Yeah, well, and I understand why they say that at the beginning of a lot of events, because it's this way to frame the following, conversation or event or something through the lens of we are on Treaty 1 territory, but it's not enough to just say it and then have that be the end mm-hmm. of the action that we take.
Yeah, right now I'm equating it a little bit to just liking a post on Facebook. What does that actually do? I do remember that when I started attending events, when I felt basically a few years ago, seven years ago, I actually started attending events where that was acknowledged, and to me it was super powerful in that moment. When the acknowledgement started, mm-hmm. I was wow, this is actually, because I guess I did feel as if that's the starting point, right? Acknowledging that, mm-hmm. That colonization happened, acknowledging that lands were stolen, acknowledging that there's people here that, aren't that, I don't know, just Canada has done really terrible things to, you know?
And continues to. Yeah.
Exactly. So to me, that was super powerful initially. But yeah, like you said, at this point, like, what next, right?
Yeah, and especially with, like, the national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women, mm-hmm. how can we, as just the average Jane, kind of take that message and implement it into our lives and kind of work to support these initiatives and to support these movements and to actually provoke change?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and we see it with things like, I don't know, I'm thinking about a lot about the Dakota Access Pipeline, I guess.
Yeah, super applicable.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, it's like technically, I guess, outside of Canada, but like for us, it's like right next door, right? Like mm-hmm. North Dakota is.
That's right there.
2 seconds away.
Yeah. It's actually an hour away, but anyways.
I mean, okay.
No, it's super close.
Figuratively,
no, yeah.
2 seconds
yeah,
away.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I was actually just reading this article on MsMagazine.com, specifically, you know, bringing it back to our discussion about violence against women and particularly that, like, racialized gendered violence. Basically, this article is talking about how the fact that pipelines continuously get constructed through Indigenous lands and, like Native American communities, it increases violence against women in those communities when they already face this incredibly high rates of, like, sexualized violence, and it's largely for men who are not part of their communities. So basically, what they're saying that. Yeah, so the article says that the vast amount of oil produced in North Dakota specifically originates from tribal lands. And then basically, so when they build pipelines, they set up temporary housing communities known as man camps, quote unquote. And so it's men from the oil industry are there and they're isolated for a long time. And then these temporary housing communities often become sites of increased incidences of rape, assault, violence, and drug-related crime. And because they are right next to or in tribal communities, it's like the victims of that violence ends up being Native women. And then the article goes into, you know, the complicated, you know, how it's very difficult to prosecute those cases because of the kind of the gray area of, like, you know, Native American sovereignty in the states and, like, the judicial system and how it's really difficult for people to prosecute, like, non-Native people within these sovereign communities. I don't know. So basically, the pipelines are directly related to violence against, like, racialized violence against women and, like, colonization. I don't know. It's just, like, another way that the pipeline is an act of violence, basically. Yeah.
And if we think about even just, like, Indigenous relationships to land and how land often mm-hmm. represents, like, spiritual beings, and they have a different connection than Western ideologies do to land, I think even just the presence and the creation of the pipelines themselves mm-hmm. are acts of violence.
Yeah.
And again, yeah. like you were describing, increase, like,
sexual violence. There's violence in just all the different types of violence are there and present when it comes to the pipeline.
And bringing that thought in this discussion back to a Winnipeg or a Manitoban context, we could even go further to discuss Drag the Red. So Drag the Red is an initiative that was locally driven. It involves searching the Red River and, I believe, water bodies around that area for evidence, hints, clues, any information that they can find in regards to missing and murdered Indigenous women. And again, it has received a lot of support from Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities within Winnipeg, but again, not something that the government has taken on as their own, as their own kind of funded program. So again, I think that speaks a lot to the relationship that the government kind of has to this initiative right now, proposing the Truth and Reconciliation statements and action points. And then again,
maybe not following through with what exactly Indigenous communities actually require from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it goes back to the, like, what are we, like, what are the meaningful actions then that we're actually taking, or the government especially is actually taking, you know, rather than, you know, just being like, we are on Treaty One territory and, like, we are going to make this better. But, like, communities are telling you what they want and what they need, mm-hmm. and you're not doing it, right? Like, Drag the Red came about because that they wanted the government to be doing that, and the government, like, didn't. So they were like, well, we're going to do it ourselves, like, you know?
And I think something, again, that Leonard Monkman spoke to in the discussion we had with him on Friday was, again, that a large part of the Truth and Reconciliation Action Plan needed to incorporate a recognition of the truths. A lot of what the Truth and Reconciliation focuses on is moving past, kind of putting a blanket over the issues, and that there needs to be an acknowledgement of stories and truths that are still out there, and voices that still need to be heard, and experiences that still need to be acknowledged, and moving forward from that then when Indigenous communities feel appropriate to do so, and with the action that's guided by the Indigenous communities themselves. So initiatives like Drag the Red again.
Yeah.
So on December 2nd, there's actually an article in the CBC regarding Pallister and how he went hard criticizing Nahani Fontaine. So Pallister is our current premier, progressive conservative, and I guess he still hasn't appointed an advisor on Indigenous women's issues, which is super telling about, like, where the priorities of this government lie, for sure. And the fact that he ended up basically saying that Nahani Fontaine did nothing in her position, and really just going hard at saying that is so ridiculous.
So Nahani Fontaine was the previous advisor?
Yes.
Okay. Just to clarify, sorry.
Yeah, she served in the role for more than 5 years. So, yeah, she's been active. And I mean, in the article, it goes on to have even, I guess, Wab Kanu's comments on the fact.
Yeah, and Wab Kanu basically says that Pallister, like, verbally attacked Fontaine, a woman, an Indigenous woman, who's nationally recognized as a leader and who's worked for years on issues regarding Indigenous women and Indigenous communities in Canada. So again, it, like we're saying here, it really tellingly speaks to what the progressive conservative government is prioritizing in their steps forward on these issues.
Yeah. Well, and he was asking, Pallister was asking for documentation, mm-hmm. kind of proving what she did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, saying so, that he has, like, what is it? Zero, nothing, nada, zilch. He has no evidence that she did any work, as I'm quoting from the article.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, which is just kind of like, you think that she just, like, sat around for 5 years and therefore you, like, is that, that's, like, why he's not appointing?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's why. Basically, because
yeah.
I know when he came into government, he did start reducing the roles and he started combining a bunch of different, like, roles.
Yeah.
So he's just doing away with stuff, basically, you know, just so he doesn't need to pay people more.
So it seems like almost a preemptive step to, like, declaring that no effective work is done in this role, when in fact,
yeah.
the role in itself is powerful. And I mm-hmm. think It needs to be filled. It needs to be filled by an Indigenous woman, preferably, or someone from the Indigenous community,
yeah.
Like Fontaine, who is doing fantastic work in reach and outreach. So,
yeah, like, okay, this is his quote. This is ridiculous. Okay, this is what he said. If you care about the issue, where's the sharing of information you gained in all that time that you were paid to produce? Like,
okay.
Come on.
Just as if, yeah, as if it's not accessible. Like, there are ways to access information, and there are ways that Pallister and his government could, like, reach out to the NDP government and have mm-hmm. a better conversation about this, a more participatory conversation mm-hmm. that doesn't involve publicly attacking an Indigenous woman involved in politics, sitting in a role that directly affects and relates to Indigenous women in Manitoba and in Canada. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't understand the rationale.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's that, like, that wording is just so infuriating, because it's like this connotation of, like, well, we gave you money, so we're entitled to, like, this entitlement because you gave this person money. And then if their answers aren't, like, good enough, then it's like, mm-hmm. well, I don't need to respect that because you were paid to produce this thing that, and it's, I don't know. Just, like, general frustration with, like, whenever, like, anything basically is, like, we need to consolidate positions and, mm-hmm. and, you know, cut funding for stuff, the things that always go first are the things that benefit women and the things that benefit racialized people and marginalized people in general. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, frustrating to watch Pallister, like, you know, like, be little sneak, find little sneaky ways to justify cutting off things that benefit marginalized people.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think a lot of, like, community-oriented and community-run organizations in Winnipeg right now and in Manitoba in the broader context are kind of thinking to themselves, like, what's going to happen with this new PC government, like, mm-hmm. in opposition to an NDP government that had provided funding to organizations like Neighborhoods Alive that really work to, like, build communities and provide resources. And where is the PC government going to find funding and kind of and how are they going to prioritize those needs again? So even relating to women's shelters that we were kind of talking about a little bit before the mm-hmm. show, like, how can we make sure that these like resources have what they need to provide communities, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, well, and yeah, again, bringing it back to that discussion on violence against women, it's like, if you cut resources mm-hmm. for things that directly help people in the community, you are directly contributing to violence against women. I'm gonna say it. That's a direct,
we support you.
Yeah.
We agree.
As per CanadianWomen.org, it says that any given night in Canada, 3,491 women and their 2,724 children sleep in shelters because their homes aren't safe, and that also on any given night, there are approximately 300 women and children who are turned away because shelters are already full. So again, just as this one small section of facts proving the purpose and the importance of women's shelters and family friendly shelters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's clearly a need. It's not as if these are expendable resources, basically, as if, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, with that, like, we definitely call everyone to donate to shelters. I mean, there's always a list of things that are always needed. And then in addition to that, you can call each shelter to ask what they specifically need. But in terms of what is usually needed, it would be razors, shaving cream, shampoo, conditioner, diapers, baby needs, sanitary supplies, underwear, socks, both like adult and children, toothpaste, toothbrushes, sleepwear, towels, school and craft supplies.
Yeah, and also items like cosmetics and nail polish, bus passes, gas cards, anything you can really donate. So again, you can reach out to local shelters, like Emerald was saying, and kind of see what they require at this moment and what kind of donations they require.
Yeah.
Kind
and I mean,
put your step forward there.
Totally. And especially, like, at least from my sense of things in Manitoba, a lot of these things are definitely, I guess they're definitely up and running and still going because of communities, not because mm-hmm. of government. So definitely taking part in that. Yeah.
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 Well, and I think that they've done studies that people who have used resources like women's shelters or food banks and stuff, they're more likely to then give back because they directly understand the value mm-hmm. of these things. And so, like, when they're in a position to be able to give, they're much more likely to give than people who have never had to use those resources. So, yeah, it's definitely like a community, like, you know, people taking care of each other when mm-hmm. the like higher institutions will not, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, I think the government also kind of uses like the power of communities as like a tool against them, saying that like if communities can run these resources by themselves sufficiently, then we don't necessarily need to fund them.
Right.
But I think what the government needs to know is the value of community development work and the value of these organizations and how it relates and translates into all other aspects of community. Like all other services that the progressive conservative government is going to work on developing, they all come back to having safer, healthier communities. And that's how we really build, again, like social capital and just make Winnipeg safer for everyone that's here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess on that note, there's something that I'm curious about. I haven't looked into it when it comes to Winnipeg shelters, but there is the issue of having these women's shelters be trans inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, violence against trans people like is super high. It's, I believe, one of the highest, especially racialized trans women.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to racialized trans women, like, are they even able to access these resources? And is like that is definitely something that's really important.
Yeah, and how do we ensure their safety within these resources and within these communities too? And like making sure that their voices are being heard and that they have the care that they need or require.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess then, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I have this vague thought about like who decides who deserves what kind of care or like what kind of resources and like who is the right kind of woman to get to have access to these kinds of things. And
I mean, to me, it's just like this whole, I guess for me, it's the discussion of like this whole day, right? National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. To me, it's kind of like recognizing that women isn't just like defined as, I don't know, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's not
like,
just cis women.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not just cis women, you know, like women has this. Yeah. I mean, who is women? Like there's so many.
Yeah. And I think it's really time that we start to like really look at our definitions here and really start to be inclusive and speak to the communities that are experiencing these like instances and long-term experiences of violence.
And
I feel like I don't know, I'm thinking about people who also don't identify with like men or women and then those kinds of like marginalized genders that like aren't necessarily always part of that conversation about like violence against marginalized genders basically. So maybe, I don't know, maybe someday the wording will be different and
definitely.
I don't know.
And I guess it's, I don't know, it's interesting to think how, because obviously this day resulted from the attack of the 14 women in Polytechnique, but like I feel as if, I don't know, I kind of hate the fact that like stats need to be produced in order for things to start happening sometimes, which definitely sucks, especially because there's always these areas that aren't focused on when it comes to producing information, producing data that would be helpful, you know. And like there are these communities that are always overlooked and always erased from the discussion, so I definitely think it's important to acknowledge like all different types of folks. And really acknowledge their realities and when it comes to violence, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. This need to have, to, like, be able to back it up with, like, concrete evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to, like, Pallister and Honey Fontaine, where's the documentation? And it's like, well, I mean, we all kind of know. Like, do we really need to spend, like a lot of money and time trying to figure out if women are like victims of violence and if we need to like help people? Like, no, we don't. We all kind of like know. Like,
totally. And furthermore, like, do we need to spend this time attacking a professional woman and like seeing if her role was effective and if her work she did was valuable? Like, I just feel like that in itself is just such a such an unnecessary and aggressive tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then just to imply that like because you don't understand what this one person did in this role, that the whole role itself isn't valuable, is like You don't get it. You don't get the bigger picture here. Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yep.
So definitely a lot to think about today.
Yep.
A lot to carry forward. And again, I think I can speak on behalf of us in this and just thanking you again for participating in this discussion and participating in our moment of silence and taking this information forward, sharing it with your friends and family and the communities around you, and just reminding everyone to be cognizant and aware and raise consciousness about violence against women, trans women inclusive, and non-binary folks. Just moving forward, I think the power of understanding can also be fairly effective. So I think that would be a position to start from. And then again, when referencing affected communities, speaking to them directly and seeing what their needs and requirements and expectations are, and kind of going from there.
Well, and it's generally like, I guess, especially like now, this time of year is like this time of giving, and people are a bit more invested in giving back to the community. And that's great. But like also, you know, year round, and when you do, when you're able to give back or like contribute to whatever like causes or whatever, it's usually pretty easy to find online where like what specifically they're looking for, or to like call somebody and be like, hey, what do you need at your shelter? Or like, I know that that the people at Standing Rock, they have online, they're like, we want this, we don't really need more people here, but we would like, you know, I know that they're looking for like tents and stuff because it's getting really cold, and so taking that extra step to not just be like, oh, this is what I feel like contributing, but like take that extra step to make it meaningful and not just like you coming in and like saving people.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so that's our show today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope we've given you some things to think about and some things to do. But you can find us on Facebook at F-Word Radio Show. Our Twitter is the same, so F-Word Radio Show. You can also email us at thefwordradio@gmail.com. So you can also find our podcast on umfm.com if you're ever wanting to listen to any of our past shows. There's, I believe, 12 up at a time. But definitely, I mean, that's... tune in next time.
All right.
All right.
See ya. See ya later.
Bye.